We want to take some time now to answer some of your questions about COVID-19 and the coronavirus causing it. And to do that, we're joined by Dr. William Schaffner, professor at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He's in Nashville. And Dr. Schaffner, welcome back to Here and Now.
Good to be with you, Tanya.
So we spoke a few weeks ago, and one question that we had early on and we still have from lots of our listeners is whether masks are effective in slowing the spread of the virus. They're selling out everywhere. What do we know about how it is transmitted, and is there any evidence that coronavirus is airborne?
Well, what we know about masks used in the community is that the data supporting that is scant. Could they have a small role in preventing the transmission of the virus? I suppose so. One of the things they do is prevent you from actually touching your nose and your mouth, which might interrupt transmission if you happen to pick it up on your fingertips. But the use of masks is more a comfort and a sign to others that you're doing your best rather than an actual prevention of getting the coronavirus or influenza, for that matter.
We've heard, though, it might be a little more effective for those who are sick versus you using it to prevent yourself from being sick. What's the science on that?
Yes, that would be correct. And we would then recommend that to be used within the home. It's not a license for sick people to go out and about, which a lot of people misinterpret.
Okay, let's get to some of our questions from our audience. Petra in Portland, Oregon asks, how long can the COVID-19 virus survive in the environment? Would transmission of the virus be possible via contact with goods produced in an endemic area?
We think that that risk is very, very low because the virus can survive for a period of hours, but then it just dies off because that's not a comfortable environment for the virus. And the way to protect oneself from potential environmental contamination just round and about is lots of good hand hygiene. Mm-hmm. Wash those hands, use those wipes and gels, and that's the way to protect yourself.
Another question sort of related to all of this is about climate. Do we know about whether the virus can live in warmer climates, or is it more susceptible to folks in colder climates? This is an interesting question because we know that the flu and the cold often comes during the wintertime, but that's not necessarily because of the temperature. Is that correct?
Well, we don't exactly know why influenza and common colds are so seasonal, but they are. And there has been a hope that the coronavirus will have read the textbook and will know what to do and kind of go away once the weather gets a bit warmer. But we don't know that this novel coronavirus, new in humans, will do that.
Here's a question from Don in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Don asks, if you get it and recover, are you then immune to getting it again?
You know, Don, that's a very, very interesting question. The normal human coronaviruses give us some protection for a period of time, and then over a period of months and years, that protection wanes and we can get reinfected. So this is a new coronavirus. Will it follow that pattern, or will it give us durable protection for a long period of time, akin to measles? We don't know the answer to that yet.
And we are seeing reports, specifically one person who had coronavirus, was treated for it in a hospital, and then went back into the general public and got it again. So I think that is also where this question is coming from. And I guess your answer to that is, we just don't know right now.
Yeah, I'm afraid, Tanya, we just don't know. And was that a biological fluke, one in a million? Or is that a phenomenon that could repeat itself more frequently? We'll try to study that and find out.
Yeah. Jonathan from San Carlos, California, is a preschool teacher, and he wants to know if there are any particular risks or precautions recommended for children and pregnant women. What about that? Are they more at risk?
Well, actually, Jonathan, one of the most provocative aspects, epidemiologic features of the coronavirus outbreak is that children are remarkably spared. Not 100%, but you don't see many, many ill children in China, for example. And so this is a peculiarity of the virus that we haven't yet really understood. The recommendations regarding children and pregnant women are the same as for all of us. Lots of good hand hygiene. Avoid people who are coughing and sneezing. And pay attention to what your local health department is saying about the risk in your particular neighborhood. We'll find out more about that as we test more broadly around the country in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Joel from Massachusetts wants to know, I think this is a question a lot of folks have, what is the most up-to-date status globally for producing an effective COVID-19 vaccine?
People are working on this in a number of venues, the National Institutes of Health, any number of vaccine manufacturers, both in this country and abroad. But we shouldn't get our hopes up for the near term. Developing a vaccine that is demonstrably safe and likely to be effective will take months, probably a year or longer. We certainly don't want to give a vaccine that's either unsafe or doesn't work. It will take time to determine that.
Yeah, some ways away. Here's an interesting question about other forms of vaccines for pneumonia and meningitis, for example. Cindy wonders if getting the vaccine for pneumonia does any good to defend against coronavirus.
The vaccine against pneumonia might provide some protection against the complication of pneumonia, which, of course, accompanies coronavirus. And now, we're going to get into the weeds here a little bit. Actually, as I read the early clinical data, it looks as though the virus itself is causing most of the pneumonias rather than a complicating bacterial infection against which the pneumonia vaccine would give us protection.
Okay. Okay, this is a question that I have too. So Alec in Silver Spring, Maryland, has a question about underlying health conditions. It's something that many people also ask us. He writes, does having asthma make me more at risk? Do we have any data on what conditions make one more susceptible to the severe infection?
Yeah, Alex, we're beginning to learn about that. The Chinese experience is telling us that, first of all, advancing age is a disadvantage. The older you get, the more likely you are to have a severe infection. And, of course, as we age, we pick up underlying illnesses, diseases of the heart, the lung, diabetes, and the like. I cannot tell you specifically about asthma. And, of course, in China, it's a much more polluted environment than we have here, and many people, particularly men, smoke. So in China, there may be many persons who have an underlying lung disease, so the lung can't respond as well, is more susceptible to severity.
Okay. Travel. Many people asked if they should cancel their vacations or other travel they have coming up, especially overseas. What do you say?
Tanya, it's been the most frequently asked question, at least has come to me, in the last week. It has a great deal to do with your risk tolerance. How nervous would it make you to either pick up a virus over there and be treated in one of those locations, or might there actually be travel barriers that are put up which would make it difficult for you to return home? Making those decisions is kind of dicey right at the moment, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Finally, I want to know from you, are there any misconceptions about this disease that you've heard that you want to dispel?
The one that's come up just recently is whether food could somehow be involved in the transmission of this virus. There's nothing to do with food and the transmission of this virus. You can put that thought aside.
That's Dr. William Schaffner, professor at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He's in Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Schaffner, thanks so much for answering these questions.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And your questions and comments are welcome at hereandnow.org.